Our first speaker this morning is David Boudreau, and David's bio is in the program, but David's with DCLRS, been working with David Crowe since 2009, and was the major architect of our defense in BCAP over the last couple of years. So he's very actively engaged in our industry and looking at energy issues and the impact of the Farm Bill and various regulatory provisions that impact our industry. So we invited David to come here today and update us on what's going on with the 2012 Farm Bill. We were so pleased with the 2008 Farm Bill. And there are some things in there that are of great concern to us. So, David?
Thanks, Phil. Okay.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that. And it's good to be here again. Actually, I think it was 3 years ago that I spoke before your meeting. And at that time, BCAP was just getting rolled out, and we didn't really know the impacts of it yet and what's going to happen and sort of the trajectory of that whole process. And perhaps, depending on your take on David Crowe's speech yesterday, I'll hopefully be a little bit more upbeat, at least on a couple of our issues, and more positive sort of end result on a couple things related to the BCAP program. So, as Bob said, you know, we worked on this program for the last several years. I'll give you kind of an overview of where that is in the process. I'll talk about the Farm Bill, some of the energy programs in the Farm Bill that were in the last bill and that will be extended, some will not in this next version. Some sort of broader energy policies, where we're headed as far as the administration goes, regardless of who wins, where there are some priorities in Congress as next year starts. A quick overview of the woody biomass industry, where it stands really with respect to wood pellets, and we'll get some more feedback on that later. I know we have another speaker who's going to talk in a lot more detail on that, but that's all connected to this same issue. I'll do a real quick snapshot on Obama, Romney, sort of different trajectories for their energy policies. And then I'll talk about the Wood Fiber Coalition, which is a coalition that Molson Soil Council is a member of, and sort of next steps for that as the next year rolls out. One thing that happened actually just a couple weeks ago, I went to this woody biomass utilization group meeting. Department of Energy organized it. It's focused on, and it's actually met every, depending on the administration, every year to every 3 years, sometimes there's a lag. The goal is to bring together, you know, the top government folks working on these issues and those in industry who work on woody biomass, sort of broadly speaking. So there were folks from DOE, USDA, Forest Service, and Department of Interior, primarily Bureau of Land Management. This is the largest federal landholder. And then obviously a lot of folks from, a few folks from our industry. We were really the only voice in the room trying to promote sort of our message on protecting access to our materials. But there were, and then the rest of the group, people in the room were primarily focused on promotion of, you know, wood pellet energy and woody biomass for energy. So this is just a quick slide on sort of who some of those folks are at USDA and Department of Energy who we've worked with at that meeting and will be going forward. And the, you know, one major issue on this whole piece is the Farm Bill and where that stands. The Senate, sort of where it is right now, and then I'll go back to sort of the history of BCAP in a minute, but the Farm Bill has been sort of a political hot potato this year, I guess, but it's normally not that kind of issue. It's, I mean, agriculture's a relatively bipartisan issue. It's one where, you know, the chairman and the ranking member generally work well together. And so it's kind of odd that this year they've had a lot of difficulty getting it passed. It passed the Senate, the full Senate, in late June, and then the House Ag Committee wrote a version of the bill, which they passed in early July. But the full House hasn't yet passed their bill, so it's sort of, it's all in limbo. And the entire, well, not the entire bill, but the entire energy title of the bill expired as of end of fiscal year 2012, so end of September. So that whole piece that includes BCAP is actually expired until they take further action. So the question mark now is whether they'll vote on this in the lame duck session, which starts really the day after the election. So it starts on November 7th, goes till about Christmas Day. So there's lots of different scenarios on what could happen during that time frame, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But sort of the history of BCAP, how many people here are somewhat familiar with it or had some problems because of it when it was rolled out in 2010, either having access to material or price increases? Yeah, I figured about most of the people in the room are pretty familiar with that. So 2002 Farm Bill was the first that actually had an energy title at all. Then the 2008 bill created the BCAP program. And the goal of it, I mean, I think our industry and people who were pretty vocal on it when it was unveiled kind of agree with the premise of it, the goal to promote cellulosic biofuels. I mean, it's a good goal, but obviously unintended consequences of how it was actually, you know, rolled out. I mean, most of the support for biofuels has been for corn-based ethanol, and so this program is really trying to get at that problem and try to promote sort of cellulosic miscanthus, energy cane, different types of new biomass crops that could be produced into biofuel. So, you know, the goal of it's great, but sort of the devil's in the details of how it's rolled out. This, and you know, the problem that came out of the collection, harvest, storage, and transportation piece of it, which is what caused the problem for us and the Woodfire Coalition, that created this matching payment program that paid $45 per dry ton of woody biomass material if you collected, harvested, stored, or transported it to a wood pellet or other woody biomass energy facility. And so that created problems for us, shortages and price increases. So we had, you know, done a lot of work on that since, and it got better, but it's still sort of out there for the future. So we'll have to, you know, be vigilant on it going forward. I talked about where the Farm Bill was this year, 2012, and this is kind of a quick overview comparison of the different energy provisions in both the House and the Senate bill. They both have a energy title, although the House version's really scaled down. The Senate version's, the Senate right now is where all the support is for that kind of policy. I mean, you have a lot of fairly liberal or moderate Democratic senators who wanted to see the BCAP and a few other programs continued. And so they did allocate significant funding for BCAP. The mandatory funding for the piece that we're most concerned about for the Senate bill had $38.6 million annually for each of the years of the Farm Bill from fiscal year 13 to 17. The House bill removed that whole component, so they approved all of the support for the CHST program. So that's actually probably long term, that's good news for us. And depending what happens here in the lame duck session, it might kind of result where there's some in-between compromise, even though that's a dirty word that Dave was talking about yesterday, but as far as where the sort of final number is on support for the BCAP program. So the Senate bill, they did try to put some parameters around it, and so they argued that of that $38.6 million, there was a percentage that could actually be used for the for CHST, so no more than 50% of that funding could be used for it. So they still were focused on this sort of new biofuel establishment payment piece of it, which is what we supported. And we were explaining that, you know, the CHST was where we had the problem back in the 2008 Farm Bill. So, you know, the government support for biomass as a whole, sort of outside of BCAP, the DOE biomass program has been, you know, around for a number of years, and they're still the driver on a lot of these biofuel projects going forward. It's just a quick fact on sort of the supply in the U.S., about 3% of total U.S. energy consumption right now. And then at USDA, BCAP is one of the big ones, and the one that we're most interested in. At the local level or state level, as I was doing some research on this, there's a lot of support for wood pellet projects. And so, for example, the state of Maryland has a rebate program for people who purchase a wood pellet stove or boiler for their house. And so there's those kinds of programs. California, a few districts or counties in California have similar programs in place. But at the scale that is going to impact us, it's not really there. I mean, I don't see it as far as long-term, how that's going to negatively impact us. More of our focus and concern, I think, should still be at the federal level. And what the woody biomass industry wants, and they had all those stakeholders who I mentioned at the meeting about 10 days ago, they, you know, their main focus, and I know from talking to a few of you last night, actually, that do this a little bit of the wood pellet work, selling into the wood pellet market, that this focus is a European market, and sort of continued expansion of European market. As the, you know, price of heating oil has gone up, Europeans have tried to purchase more wood pellet energy. So most of that is going that direction. And in this region in particular, actually, Enova Energy, which is headquartered here in Atlanta, just announced about a month ago that they're going to be building 3 wood pellet energy facilities in this part of the U.S. So there's one in South Carolina and 2 in Georgia. One's going to be in Savannah, and they're pretty significant investments. So they're going to be shipping most of those wood pellets to Europe, to the U.K. So that will potentially have an impact on us outside of sort of these federal programs that are still out there. So that's sort of something we should continue to monitor and figure out how that's going to impact the industry. I said I was going to talk a little bit about sort of energy policy broadly. You know, energy efficiency is the one bipartisan issue that, if you had to ask me sort of what could happen next year that could actually pass Congress, it's probably some sort of energy efficiency bill. And that's really the one big piece that actually could go forward next year. I mean, Congress has been at such a gridlock that it's hard to see a lot of other major energy pieces going forward, regardless of who wins in about a week. I'm not sure how this impacts you across the country or how much you've heard on the drought, but you know, the corn shortages across the country have impacted sort of this broader support for the renewable fuel standard. And there's a lot of questions as to should they institute like a 1-year waiver for it, how that's going to impact sort of the cellulosic biofuel piece of this, and how that'll drive the policy argument for supporting continued funding for, you know, advanced biofuels in particular. So those are sort of the couple big question marks out there. And the EPA actually has until November 11th, which is, you know, right around the corner, to respond to these. There are 5 states, one of them in North Carolina, but a few were in the southeast here. They sent it to EPA and said, you know, hold up RFS2 for 1 year. So they will know very shortly if they're going to approve that or not. And the thought behind that is that if they sort of do it for 1 year, it'll give, you know, the corn industry a better chance next year at a better growing season with normal rainfall, so they can actually meet some of those cellulosic, actually the corn-based ethanol targets. So that's sort of where I see things going. A couple of big issues next year, sort of regardless of who wins, depending on where the election goes, focusing on the specific differences between Romney and Obama. And David talked about this a little bit yesterday with regard to sort of regulation, EPA regulation, and sort of executive orders that could come down, because we could have a pretty much status quo situation where the House and the Senate are split. Obama's perhaps reelected, but there were, just to do a quick couple minutes on this, Romney and Obama, there's obviously a few major differences, but there's a lot of points of agreement actually on sort of energy policy broadly. The major differences are in coal and oil and gas production. It's probably a follow from just from campaign ads, but the Romney campaign is really focused on offshore exploration of oil and gas and promoting sort of clean coal technology development. They both actually agree on the potential for fracking and shale gas development in going into the next few years, and that I've read numbers where that could actually produce something like 40% of our oil and gas going forward. So that's the one, one issue where they'll probably, regardless of who wins, they'll be promoting it from a Department of Interior perspective. And Romney says, of course, Keystone Pipeline, you probably followed that from 6-8 months ago. Obama's kind of delayed that decision several times, so I don't think anything will change on that for Obama in the next year. And as David sort of alluded to yesterday, the greenhouse gas registry that EPA started to implement will really be a focal point, I think, for a newly elected Obama administration. I think if Romney were to win, I think he would still actually probably pursue that, but he would probably put everything on hold for a little while and do kind of an evaluation of where that program stands before going full speed ahead on it. So sort of the energy subsidy future, where we're headed, and sort of where we've been, especially with relationship to our BCAP sort of debacle. This is a point of good news for folks in the room who don't agree with sort of energy subsidy, broadly speaking. This, as I mentioned earlier, the corn support in the RFS2 could go away at least temporarily for a year, perhaps longer. The campaign issue that became Solyndra and the sort of solar support, that's clearly at risk regardless of the election. I think the Department of Energy and the Obama administration are really going to look at approving some of these projects in the future, and they'll really do their due diligence, I would hope, so that they don't get this kind of negative backlash and image about sort of who's, the result is about who's funded his campaign and were they were Solyndra executives and that kind of thing. So there's that kind of due diligence on the part of the administration to make sure those kinds of things don't happen. The wind production tax credits expiring at the end of the year, it's always been kind of a 1-year or 2-year tax credit. I could see that easily going away at the end of this year. On the wood pellet front, though, the Department of Energy is going to continue to support, as will USDA, woody biomass and woody pellet production in the U.S. So that piece will stay intact. And as I mentioned earlier, it's going to continue this sort of push toward Europe and European markets. On the specifically Romney and biomass, if he's elected, I don't think that things will change much on sort of his support for those types of programs and policies. But I think that if he's elected, and I've kind of gotten this from talking to a couple people who've worked on his campaign, that if he's elected, he'll probably take a really good look again at not just, I mean, BCAP's smaller under the big picture of where things are, but with regards to like certain EPA regulations that have either come in the last 4 years or even were sort of underway before Obama was elected, I think he's going to take a major look at whether some of those can be put on hold or reevaluated and restructured in ways that are a little more favorable to industry. That's sort of a drumbeat that's been the last year in D.C. that there's so many congressmen on the Hill from the Republican side in particular who've argued that, you know, EPA overregulation has really impacted job growth in the U.S. And so that sort of continued mantra of sort of job impacts will translate into, you know, around the administration really looking at where these programs have been and how they can be fixed in some ways. And I think he could pose future subsidies that are similar to the BCAP program. It could disrupt markets if they're not well thought out. So the, you know, problem with BCAP was they admitted to us, actually when Bob and I went into the USDA offices in early 2010, they said, you know, this program, well-intentioned, it wasn't well thought out in terms of details, and they basically just admitted that to us in the meeting. And so I think, you know, in a next administration, I would hope that regardless of who wins, that they really take those things into account before they roll out a program like that could impact our industry. So, you know, how do we protect ourselves going forward from those types of programs? We have to be proactive. That sort of sounds trite, but we have to make sure that we're following everything that's coming out of Congress. There are several renewable biomass bills that were introduced this year, none of which really went anywhere, but you never know where those are headed next year, whether those same bills will come back or if something similar could. And they're actually trying to redefine what renewable biomass is and sort of what eligible materials fall under it. So that's something we have to continue to monitor. The Wood Fiber Coalition, as I mentioned earlier, it's Mulch and Soil Council, it's American Nursery and Landscape Association, it's Society of American Florists, Composite Panel Association, it's a Business Institute Furniture Manufacturers Association. So it's really anyone who's impacted by sort of woody biomass access. And so it's anything from furniture to soil to mulch products. So that coalition was really what led this whole effort. And it still exists. And actually, we're supposed to have another call here in another couple of weeks, kind of talk about after the post-election, where can we be active and where can we really promote our message? And our message the last year has been, and our goal has been to find a advocate in Congress who will support an amendment that would actually redefine woody biomass. As I mentioned, there were several other bills out there this year that tried to do that. They were actually expanding the definition of renewable biomass. We're trying to narrow it, or at least create a sort of protected section around it that would protect our materials. So the problem is that there are 14 definitions of renewable biomass in federal statute, which obviously leads for all kinds of confusion with who's interpreting it, whether it's a Department of Energy person or a USDA person, and they're reading different definitions. There's really, of those 14, there's really three that are the focal point of how these programs are written. But as I mentioned, we need to find someone in Congress who will introduce an amendment in either the Farm Bill or another energy bill that comes out next year that would define what a higher value use for some of these materials and products are and make sure that they can't be used in programs like BCAP. So that's our goal. We got pretty close. Over the summer, there was a congressman from Wisconsin, actually, who was a freshman Republican, and he sounded very interested, went into his office, explained the whole issue, the history behind it, how we could use his help. And he said, well, make sure you can get a couple of these other big associations behind it. So we reach out to those folks, you know, the forest owners and the American Forest and Paper Association. They didn't want to touch it. They didn't want to talk about revising the definition. So, as you might guess, the Congress backed away from his support of potentially helping us with that definition. That was, I think, a temporary setback. I think next year we can find someone like him or go back to him and talk about this again, especially with a sort of new dynamic in the House and getting enough votes to pass something like that. I mean, the way the farm bill is looking, if it's extended here, we come back in a few weeks and they do a retroactive extension of, you know, 5-6 months, it gets us into the early part of next year, and then we'll have a chance to offer an amendment in that process as the farm bill is considered either on the House or the Senate floor or both. And so that's sort of the several month out trajectory of where this could go. And you know, the ultimate goal is to try to protect our industry from any of these ill-conceived programs like ECAP. So that's sort of a quick overview of farm bill, renewable biomass, or wood pellet issues. Now I'm sort of just wondering what your thoughts are on farm bill or other questions you have about anything I mentioned so far.
I got a question. Has anybody done a study? I know when this biomass, you know, regulation came into effect, they were looking at all the woody waste that was going into landfills and all that that the mulch people have since taken in use, and now they're using raw material that basically, can somebody do a study to show how much pollution they're putting in the air to cut down the trees, bring the trees to the plant, and how much, you know, emissions that fuel puts out in the atmosphere, mm-hmm. and trees also clean the air, and do a study on that compared to what coal's doing. Mm-hmm. I think they'll find out that coal's putting a lot less on a whole pollution, and it's not raping our land. Mm-hmm.
And so you're fuel.
You know, I mean, we know that that's what they were going for when they did all this, mm-hmm. but that's no longer available.
And so you're hoping that someone would support a study that would look at that sort of that life cycle analysis of it's basically, you know, goes from every component of that process for the wood material, and then compare that to coal, and then present that as sort of the argument for which I wasn't quite clear on which direction you were supporting, though. You're saying that coal is cleaner than argued.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, coal is probably a lot cleaner than what the actual end use in biomass fuel is now because of what they're using. They're not using waste products anymore. Mm-hmm. And plus, it doesn't go to the U.S. anyhow, majority of it.
That's a good point. Well, yeah, and that's the
disposal too.
I mean, those are the kinds of, and it's a really good idea, actually, but anytime we go into congressional office, they want to see what study has been done on this, and obviously they don't want it to be funded by industry. They want it to be, you know, a peer-reviewed university kind of piece that looks at that. It's a great idea that we could actually, I mean, you can, from a lobbying perspective, you can promote that kind of idea through channels of sort of university contacts and say, has anyone looked at this? Can you help? And then we go back into that congressional office when they ask that kind of question. They'll want to see it so they can respond to any critics from either side. So it's helpful, I think. I mean, it's good. It's a very good idea.
Well, the impact of it is not going to only be in our industry. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in the housing industry because everything uses that wood to build, you know, up and down the East Coast now that with that hurricane come in. You know, you're going to see a demand of raw material for that huge amount. And then if we ever, our economy starts growing, we start building more houses, it's going to increase the cost of everything across the board because we're trying to save energy, but we're throwing dollars away and picking up pennies.
Right. That's a good point. It's actually a helpful idea, actually, going forward into our next set of Capitol Hill meetings. There are a few, and there's actually an organization called Informa Economics, and they'll put together that kind of study for a group like ours, and they're viewed as sort of a, you know, removed from industry in that sense that they're peer-reviewed and supported in that kind of work. So that's a great idea, I think, actually, in the next few months going forward into how we can throw that out as an idea to our coalition.
To elaborate more on what Bill's talking about, in cogeneration, the issues he's talking about certainly apply, but in addition to that, when you look at a pellet operation and you look at the energy that they're consuming to convert a tree into a powder and then compress it into a pellet, and you look at where that energy is coming from, coal, and you add that to the study that he's talking about, and then you consider that a ship is going to send that to Europe, and how much oil is it going to burn getting to Europe?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, the whole life cycle of that process. I mean, it doesn't. I'm sure that the wood pellet then doesn't come out nearly as well as Department of Energy would make you believe.
I mean, I would think if you really did a serious study on that, it would be very obvious that the wood pellet industry needs to die.
There have been studies done, not necessarily comparing to coal, Bill, but the carbon footprint of biomass. Mm-hmm. So all the diesel fuel that's burned in the process of getting fuel being produced and utilized. Mm-hmm. Might be a way to stop, if you're going to research the topic, carbon footprint on that.
That's helpful. Or do you know off the top of your head?
I do not.
Okay. No problem. I'll track it down, but it's good. It's helpful. Thanks. Another question?
There's at least three studies that I know of that are done for harvest of trees through into boilers and the carbon footprint versus burning it, what carbon's released, and then the young trees growing. Most folks, with the exception of one study that was done in the Northeast, will make the case that you're almost a neutral carbon footprint. We're just talking about carbon, but they're not talking about pellets or the energy that's used. I had a question, and that's the one of the other these two farm bills that are proposed was to pass. What's the net dollar effect to Congress? So if they're trying to balance a budget, what's their net, also negative dollars?
For the whole farm bill or for the energy?
No, the whole farm bill.
The whole farm bill, so the way the reason this process is taking so long is that about a year ago, it was October, November 2011, the super committee was assigned to come up with all these different cuts in different parts of the government. And one of them was agriculture, and the agriculture committees worked together, House and Senate, and tried to come up with an agreement. And they finally ended up with a $23 billion cut to the total farm bill. Now, the whole farm bill over 5 years, this next iteration of it, before that cut would have been $1 trillion. So it's a huge amount of money. And the $23 billion, I mean, it's like a couple percent cut from that. So they were trying to be sort of fiscally responsible. But if you look at that whole outlay, it really doesn't look like that much of a cut. And then that was the Senate was more in favor of that, and that's what they promoted in their version of the farm bill. The House wanted to cut a little bit more, and they promoted a $33 billion cut, so $10 billion more than the Senate version. So, if depending what happens, and if they pass something here in November, it would probably be kind of right in the middle of that number, I think. So it would be $5 billion more than the Senate, and $5 million less. Or $5 billion, sorry, less than the House version. So it's a $28 billion cut to the whole farm bill.
It's so they're still going to save $1 trillion roughly if they just forget about it.
Yeah, I mean it's still going to be 960
free market take care.
some 70 some $1 billion for the whole 5-year farm bill. And that's why it's another reason why it's been so controversial is that 78% of it is food stamps. So, and a lot of people don't know that. 78% of the farm bill is food stamps.
They hide it and everything, don't they?
This is something David told me, but in the Nixon administration, it's the only reason they came up with this idea that in the future, to continue passing farm bills, you were going to have to pair the food stamp piece with the programmatic piece that helps farmers in rural America. And so it was Nixon's Ag Secretary who came to Nixon and said, if you want to pass this going forward, you need to merge it into one bill. And so you get the urban lawmakers to vote for the food stamp piece because they care about that because their constituents sign up for food stamps and a lot of them need food stamps. And then you pair that with the farm piece in rural America, and you get a bill that passes every time because it has support of urban and rural. Normally, if you separated the two, you would never have enough votes to pass the farm provision piece. You probably would still have enough to pass the SNAP or the food stamp piece of it, but the House Republicans really wanted to cut the food stamp piece, and that's why this has sort of percolated and never really gone anywhere. It's just the House version, that $10 billion extra in cuts is mostly to the food stamp program, and the Senate Democrats don't want to do that, and so that's why it's sort of at a no-go zone, and they've never, and in the House too, where even though the Republicans control it, there are enough, it's a weird dynamic. I've talked about this with a lot of people in D.C., but a lot of these newly elected Tea Party Republicans, they represent rural districts that obviously have a big farm base, but they also came to Congress with the idea that they were going to cut government spending, so they want to cut food stamps, and they also want to cut certain farm programs, so they're, in a sense, they're alienating their farmer constituent voters, and the sort of end result is that the farm bill doesn't have enough votes from Republicans just in the House to pass it, so they need to search for Democratic votes, probably 50 or 60, and they don't want to vote for it because there's too many cuts to the food stamp program, so that's why it's sort of stalled in the House. So that's D.C. for you, and that's sort of the complaint. It's a pretty dysfunctional city right now, so my only hope is that after this election that kind of thing will die down a little bit, but I don't see a quick path out of it, though.
So. David, do you have a ballpark number for how much pellets are actually exported?
I saw a number, I think 750,000 tons, metric tons, were exported in the first half of 2012. So these, and I mentioned the three plants earlier that are going to come online in Georgia and South Carolina, and I think those three combined will add another 450,000 to that 750,000. So obviously a pretty substantial increase there in the next couple of years.
What percentage is that of all the wood pellets produced in the U.S.?
I'm not sure. I do know that, to more of your first question, that actually we just surpassed Canada in terms of largest exporter of wood pellets in the world to Europe. So that we now sort of overtaken that because most of the forests in Western Canada were a lot of them were being processed for that wood pellet material and now being shipped to Europe. But we just overtook that in the last few months from a U.S. perspective.
Do subsidies actually end up with the producers that export?
To a certain extent. I mean, some of these DOE incentives have helped some of the exporters here. But the market sort of economics of it, actually, it's profitable without Department of Energy subsidies right now. The I think it was like $4 for a 40-pound bag of wood pellets right now, a little over $4. And 1 gallon of heating oil is like $3.50. And so to heat a home in the northeastern U.S., for example, I mean, it's about 10 times as expensive to keep using heating oil compared to wood pellets right now.
In that number that you have on export, is that actually going out to the export facility, or is that manufactured location? And the reason I ask is a lot of the requests, specifically requests, the U.S. is going out to people who see.
Right. Well, on the East Coast, a lot of it's produced and exported really from the same location. And the West Coast, I think there's especially like British Columbia, there's a little bit more transportation involved, and sometimes the pellet facility might not actually be close or as close to a port as they are for the eastern U.S.
When you talk about highest value use and BCAP funds not being able to be used for a product that has a higher value, I'm confused about how that really plays out, because you have a mulch industry that's competing against the wood fiber, against a cogen operation, for example, and there's not enough for both parties, and the electrical generating facility has an agreement with the municipality to sell the electricity to them at a price that could go up based on cost. So the sky's the limit for them. And so if they look at this as a problem in the higher value and BCAP subsidy, it looks to me like it would be easy for them to raise their price above ours, and then the subsidy kicks in to offset it. And so how does that whole process work in determining best, highest value use?
Well, it's sort of subject to interpretation from USDA, for in particular example, BCAP, USDA and the Farm Service Agency administers the program. And when they came out with the final rule, and Bob and I had gone in and met with them, as they had received something like 24,000 comments on the BCAP program. And we went in, and there were obviously a lot of stakeholders who came into their offices and met with them too. And so the final, and that was during, it's all these different rules, they go through several stages, but from the proposed rule to the final rule, they wrote in there for us that it was protecting higher value uses of wood fiber material that would go to, and they didn't create a long list because they figured those kinds of lists you could leave out an industry or whatnot, but it defined sort of if it was otherwise used for something of higher value, so like if the wood chips were going to be compressed into particle board and then made into furniture, that was a higher value use. And so that FSA staff basically, before they approved, the final result of that was that before they would approve future BCAP subsidized projects, that they would have to take a look at how it's just going to affect tangentially connected industries that might source or use the same material. So maybe not the answer you want here in terms of it's basically a government official that's going to evaluate it and that has evaluated it, but that's sort of how the process works. The good piece of news on this is that in both versions it's not funded very much anyway compared to the previous farm bill. It's one thing I didn't mention in too much detail, but that $38 million number for BCAP for the Senate version is much less than the 2008 bill basically said, had a phrase, such sums as are necessary, which means whatever amount of money the federal government really decides to pump into it. So it could have been given the billions of dollars if sort of left to run amok. So the benefit of that is that there's not as much money to go around and to support these kind of projects. So that's one good thing. But the The other benefit is that the final rule said this higher value use is sort of protected. So, that was I think a win for us, having said that the FSA, USDA staff are the people who ultimately decide what that is. And that's, some people argue that might not be a good thing, but I think it's at least good that they've sort of recognized that there's a need to protect our industry and others that are, you know, connected to that kind of lead biomass material.
And it's not just the market value of the end product. It's also the employment that we do, the economic, our industry's contribution to the GMP. So we were all gathering up data on how many people do we employ, what, you know, how much does, you know, how much does having a mulch plant in a rural area that is low on employment opportunities, if this goes out of business, what does that mean to the local economy?
And do they expand on that and say, okay, we make potting soil, and then the landscaping company takes the potting soil and they employ people too?
Yes, that's why we had the coalition with us and the landscape guys and say, if it doesn't start here, it doesn't go there, and if it doesn't go there, then,
When we went to meet with the USDA staff on this and raised our concerns with it, when we had a map of the U.S. with us, and you remember the map, it had sort of concentric circles drawn on it in different colors from different industries, either the mulch industry or the composite panel industry, and it basically covered the entire U.S. And the USDA staff kind of laughed, and we said these circles represent where our companies exist and where their sort of economic footprint is in the country. And so it basically covered the entire map, and they kind of laughed, and they said, we get your point, and we understand that this has a ripple effect.
I think there was an area about 500 miles east of Helena, Montana, that didn't have a...
anything on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll take care of
that. Oh, thank you.
Has anybody went to them for sustainability studies that the volume of trees that these pellet plants are using, how long is it going to be before they're out of material?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, at the woody biomass meeting that I went to at DOE a few weeks ago, there were a couple of people who brought up that kind of argument that there is sort of a point where this isn't environmentally friendly anymore. There's a level where it's probably going to have to be sort of capped. And the counter argument with people in the room said, well, it won't just be from like a southern pine that grows relatively quickly compared to other trees. It'll be some future, GMO type plant that can be processed into some sort of wooded pellet type material, and that it would be, much quicker growing season, renewable, faster, that kind of thing. And so they're, it's sort of a chicken and egg thing, and, when will they develop that type of plant or a material? So, long term, there might be some company that creates that, and I know there are some that are trying to invest in that kind of research, but that's a good point. I mean, if it's just focused on a particular type of tree or a few types of trees, there's a point where it's no longer a sustainable practice. So,
I mean, the ripple effect for us in Florida with just the one plant in Waycross is causing a ripple effect all the way down. And now they're talking about putting two more on the line.
Do you know, is your congressman, is it Sutherland, in your area, do you know, off the top of your head?
No.
Okay. I was just curious. There are a couple of Florida congressmen on the Ag Committee who could be helpful going forward on this, but I'll look into that for you.
Thank you.
There's a new German study that basically looks at the carbon release. So when you're processing large volumes of timber for bioenergy, the carbon release is enormous compared to how long it took to sequester it. And the replacement plants, before they reach maturity, so you end up with, there's a glut and a deficit, and before they can equal each other out, you have to wait about 35 years. So, and that's on a continuously rolling basis. So basically their contention is it makes absolutely no sense environmentally, to use woody biomass for energy. There was also a report several years ago by a Center for Concerned Science that basically said the same thing, that the bioenergy people poo-pooed as not realistic. So now there's two studies that have said the same thing, that the carbon deficit is in the area of 20 to 35 years, and that's a continuously rolling basis, so it just accumulates. And the original intent of BCAP was to develop resources and supplies that you could harvest in multiple crop rotations each season. You know, that you could replenish. You harvest a tree, yeah, the next rotation is 25 years from now, not 25 days from now.
Right.
So the whole thing kind of took a left turn, and we have to thank a Virginia congressman for that. Not mine, by the way.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, David.
Thanks for your time.